This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
Hey folks, are you in New York City for Pride? Come see a live taping of If These Ovaries Could Talk. The show is in partnership with WNYC at the Green Space, and our special guest is stand-up comic Jessica Kirsten. Oh my God, she's amazing. The show is on June 10th at 7 p.m. If you want tickets, go to ovariestalk.com and click the live events button. Get those tickets now. This episode is brought to you by Storyworth. We're super excited to have them on board.
Super. It's so
2019, according to our writer's
way. okay. Guys.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome
to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
We are your hosts.
That's Jamie.
And that's Robin.
And this is not the first time we've done an intro, which is frightening.
You know, so some podcasts actually have just like pre-recorded intros that are always the same.
Dare to dream, Jamie, that we could have a pre-recorded intro.
And then we could be like Oprah, my dream.
It's too slick. We're not that slick, Jamie.
But I don't have a voice. Hello, welcome to, like, can I be Oprah?
Well, don't do that. Whatever that is, Joan. You get a car.
You are.
Stevie Wonder.
Yours is better than mine.
I know, that was surprisingly good.
I do voiceovers for a living. That was good.
Thanks. I feel good about that. Yeah. All right, folks. I don't know if this is like a blessing or a curse, but after this episode, there's only two more episodes in the season.
God.
My last one is June 17th. Our last episode will be the recorded version of the live event.
And so, come on, get your tickets. I'm saying it. Even though it wasn't in the Google Doc to say it, I'm saying it.
Jamie, it was not in the Google Doc. Don't say it.
Get your tickets, people.
But so you guys don't leave us while we're gone.
Yeah.
Stay in touch with us over the social.
And we do so much on the social now.
We do. It's kind Probably of too much.
Sickening. But it's fun.
But it's fun.
But we're going to be working on the book.
Sure are.
Yeah.
We're going to be putting up more dumb videos.
That's all we do is dumb videos. And it's fun.
And then we're coming back on September 23rd for, I'm calling it Back to School.
That's how we do.
Okay. We have before we get to our guest, we have a very important announcement. We have a merch store.
It's so.
Dude.
Oh my God.
We got Over East Talk t-shirts, onesies.
We have so much cool hats.
Tank top.
Oh my God. We have so much cool stuff.
Buy some stuff.
You guys, actually what you should do is get ready for Pride Month because Pride is coming up. It's World Pride, which means it's all around the world.
Yeah.
If you didn't realize that.
That's and what World Pride means.
Go on, buy some merch.
Go on. There's a little shopping tab in overeastalk.com. You can buy some junk if you feel like it. I mean, we just made it. It's there. Whatever. Buy some if you like.
I mean, actually.
By the way, can you believe my dad was a used car salesman and that's myself? That's my pitch?
Also, you just actually took on my persona there, which is funny.
Buy it if you want.
She really doesn't mean that. She means buy it, bitches. Buy it.
You were the driving force with merch.
Was I really?
I was one implementing the system, but you were like, get merch.
And you will be wearing
By the way, driving force with Jamie means every once in a while she goes, oh, we need merch. That's driving force.
Today's episode.
Oh my God. Another part two, Jamie. So last week we had Kim Bergman, who, you know, ran that surrogacy egg donor agency where basically you just go to her. She project manages the crap out of your fertility experience.
And if she's you need a surrogate. Such an expert.
Amazing.
Knows but everything.
Today we have Kelly, who is a surrogate and who works with Kim. And she was a surrogate like three times. In addition to having her own babies.
Dude, she likes to be pregnant.
I can't even imagine.
This is like what Kim was talking about. Like, you know a surrogate when you see one.
Yeah.
And there are these special people and we get to talk to one.
I know.
I feel like we're about to talk to an angel.
A unicorn. All right, let's get her in here.
Fairy.
That's so gay.
Hi.
Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Hello.
Where are you currently sitting?
So I am in Lincoln, California, which is an offshoot of Sacramento.
Oh.
Most people
Kelly,
have no
I'm
idea.
From... San Francisco.
Ah, I went to school in San Francisco.
Oh.
All right, Kelly. So you're our part two. We had Kim as your boss, right?
Yes. She's one of the owners of Growing Generations, which is the surrogacy and egg donation agency that I work for.
Okay. So yeah, so you're our part two because you have been a surrogate.
Yeah. So let's get the elevator pitch.
Yeah.
I said elevator.
Give us the elevator pitch about your life, about you, Kelly.
Yes. So I'm Kelly. I am married to my wife, Erin. We have a blended family. So I came into the marriage with my three children and she came into the marriage with her son. So my three kids were born through my first marriage. I was married to a man. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, yeah. dun, dun.
I'm one of those. And
came over to the good side.
Yep. And
no offense to the straight people.
Saw the light. So Reba McEntire song.
Yes, I did. I figured it all out. And my wife, Erin.
So where did, after three kids, you figured it out?
No. So I pretty much knew since high school. I mean, to say that I was raised a certain way isn't necessary that my family felt a certain way. It's just that society told me that if I wanted to be a mom and have a family, that meant marrying a man. Yeah. And so I'm very pragmatic and I can pretty much make anything work. And so when I was at San Francisco State, I met somebody. We were really great friends. We started to date later. When he asked me to marry him, I was like, okay. At that time, Prop 22 had
just... I can do it.
Yeah. Prop 22 had just failed. So obviously... that wasn't happening. And so I remember thinking like, okay, you know, like this, you know, like I can't think of a, you know, better person to marry and have a family with, you know, at the time. and so, you know, that's where my family started. And I would say about 2011 is when that ended. And that ended not really, like, I mean, I'm sure it ended partly because of me as well. But part of my thing was I came from a divorced home, didn't want my kids to come from a divorced home. I pretty much figured I'd stick this out, you know, for as long as I could.
But
I knew. Yeah. And he knew too. But at that point in time, it was more of am I bi? Like, what is this? Mm-hmm. Like, I know, you know, I know that I'm attracted to women. I know that I'm married to a man. So what does that make me? I just figured at the time I was like the world's best ally. But then later I found out that I was the crappiest ally because I was literally a lesbian pretending I was a straight
woman.
You're
an ally for you. That's what you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also the rest of the world. Come on. Let's
be real. Yeah. So, yeah. So eventually, you know, it was actually really funny because when my marriage did break up, although that wasn't the funny part. It was a shock to me because like I said, I was in it for the long haul, at least until the kids graduated high school, and he wasn't. And, you know, of course, when you're married to a lesbian, things probably aren't the way that he wanted them to be either. So
I'd like more than a high five at night.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe in the middle of the night. Whenever
not to put
it.
Words in your mouth or anything.
I mean, I'm just saying, tell me he didn't want more. I'm just saying.
Anyway. No. Yes. No, that's exactly it. Jamie. So I remember at one point in time when we were separating, he had a goatee, and, you know, I thought he looked better with a goatee on. And so he said, oh, well, you know, I said, well, hey, look at this way. Now you could shave off your goatee. And he's like, and now you can date women. And I was like, oh, you know what? I think I will. So from that point on, it was very much like, okay, this is like a second chance at life. So I'm going to do it the way that I should have done it. You know, of course I wouldn't change anything because I wouldn't have my kids, but it is what it is. And so kind of going forth. Now, all this happened when I was 6 weeks pregnant with my third surrogacy baby.
We have a lot more to cover in this element.
I know.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are. All right. We are. So how do we do this? Anyway, so that marriage ended. I'm with my wife. You know, we got married in 2014, living in Lincoln. She, of course, she knew that she was gay from like 20 on. So she was out. Her son was born with a previous partner via a sperm donation. She carried him. And so that's kind of how our little family met. And so we've been, you know, together ever since then. I'm sure the other stuff will come up as we go. I don't want to put the... I already put the cart before the horse, stuff? Right?
What are we talking about?
We got so much stuff to unpack.
So you had three kids with your husband, ex-husband, mm-hmm. before you broke up.
Yes.
And you had done two surrogacies and were on a third.
Yes.
I didn't mean to get so much into your husband's business, but like, how did he feel about you being a surrogate?
He was fine with it. You know, the one thing, like, I think that that's one of the things about surrogacy is I think a lot of times women are drawn to it for just the whole, like, you know what it's like to be a mother. You know that you want to help somebody out, whether that's to be a mother or a father. Like, you just know how amazing it is to be a mom. And why wouldn't, you know, you want to help somebody else get that, you know? So I think women go about it that way. I feel like for some of the partners who happen to be men, a lot of times it's more of like, okay, that's kind of odd, but all right. But then there's the compensation that comes with it. And so I always joke around and say that, you know, the altruism's for the woman and the compensation is for the men. Like, okay, there you are getting something out of this, you know. And he was always very, you know, he was the first time, I didn't think I'd do it more than one time. So, you know, the first time it was really interesting. It was before my third child. So I signed up, did the application, and then going through the application, they talked to you about like, well, do you want to have any more kids? And I was like, you know what? I do. And so we decided to go ahead and put that on hold. I had my last son, Sawyer. Once I was done breastfeeding him, then I was like, all right, let's do this. And my ex was like, yep, let's go ahead and do it. So we did it. I only thought I'd do it one time. After I did it, it was absolutely amazing. And we got to know the other family. We got to be pretty close to them. And so, you know, when Growing Generations asked me, like, do you think you want to do another one? We were both like, yeah, that was amazing. Like, you know, why wouldn't we do another one?
I want you to break down what was amazing about it.
Oh,
because gosh. We for full disclosure, because you don't know us well, both of us hated being pregnant.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was hard.
I hated it. Jamie's like, it was challenging.
Robin likes to use stronger words than me.
I do. I really do.
I like to soften it a bit. It was hard for me. It was challenging. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see like you gave an amazing gift for people, but beyond that, I'm like,
So one of the things that pretty much all surrogates have in common is we love being pregnant. Loved our own pregnancies. Yeah. You'd have to, because most people, and I have friends like that too, where they're like, I say, oh, you know, I'm a surrogate. And they're like, oh, I could never do that. And I was like, you know, yeah, then don't. Like, you don't have to, right? You know, so like, but, you legit don't have to have anybody else's babies if you don't want to. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I had easy pregnancies. You know, I I don't know. I'm also kind of built. I'm sure, you know, your audience can't see, but I'm not the smallest woman that ever existed. And sure, after, you know, you're seeing me now.
You're not the biggest woman either. I want you to know that, Kelly. You're not big. So,
okay. Yeah. But, you know, now you're also, you know, what you're looking at is somebody who had, you know, 6 pregnancies, 2 of which were twins. So in the
both the surrogacies.
Yes. What? Yeah. So like, so my kids were born in 2001, 2003, 2006. And then my surrogacy, the first twins were born in 2008. The second were born in 2010. And my third, which was a singleton, was 2012. So I'm sure as you do that math, you also could figure out that there's not a lot of time for something else than high fives either. So it was like the perfect. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, although, you know, it's really funny because like for me, I like, and that's the other thing with pregnancy is the sexiest I ever feel is when I'm pregnant.
Because really?
I love a big belly.
Don't look at me like I'm crazy. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, you know, I've always felt really great about it. And like I said, you have to, in order to be a surrogate, you know, want to be pregnant. And I loved being pregnant. And I guess it's great since I was pregnant so often. It's a good thing that I liked it.
Oh my God, Robin.
What?
I completely forgot that Father's Day is coming up.
Oh yeah.
Listen, all our 2-dad households need to remember to celebrate.
Yeah. No, that doesn't happen in a 2-mom household.
No, we forget.
So I hope you do, guys.
No, it's kind of a tough day for me because I just lost my dad a year ago. Yeah. But I was thinking, I wish I had like all his stories in one place, and it got me thinking about StoryWorth.
Yeah. StoryWorth is so good. So for all our listeners who want to capture their dad's stories for Father's Day, StoryWorth is for you. So basically you can give the gift to your dad or, you know, another family member, like the way Jamie's going to give it to her mom. And each week, StoryWorth will email them with story prompts. And these are questions that you'd never think to ask. And then at the end of the year, they send a hardcover book bound and all professional and junk with your stories. It's amazing.
I know. It's so great. And this is why I'm glad I gave this gift to my mom, because like my dad always wanted to write a book about his life. He was like this epic storyteller and we just missed the boat with it. He died before he could do it. So, you know, even though he's gone, the stories are going to live on through my mom sharing them. And that's really special.
And there's some really interesting questions that they ask. Like, have you ever given or been the recipient of a random act of kindness?
Mm-hmm. Thoughtful. I
mean, yeah. Or like, what's the gift that you always wish someone would give you? I love these questions.
I know. I always think about what my mom would answer. I don't know. We'll see. You can also, the cool thing is you can write the stories via email. You can also upload the pictures by email or on the web. And there's an app where you can upload too if you've got tech savvy relatives. And you can also invite an unlimited number of people to receive the stories. This is going to really hopefully make Father's Day like something special for all of us.
I think
this
it will.
Year,
you know? I think so.
Yeah.
And for all of our listeners, you can get $20 off StoryWorth. You just visit storyworth.com/OCT when you subscribe.
Let's say that one more time, Robin.
Do it.
For $20 off, visit storyworth.com/OCT when you subscribe.
I love it.
Get it. Boop. So I still want to know. So you feel sexy when you're pregnant. What else do you love about being pregnant? I really,
especially
with a baby that you know is not yours and you're not going to keep.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it's like I taught, well, actually, even this last semester I taught human sexuality. So I taught high school for a few years and taught health and sex ed. And then after my son was born, like for 11 years, I taught human sexuality at a community college level. When my son got sick, my youngest son, got sick, I went ahead and took off. And then I actually just went back this semester. So I stopped teaching in 2014. And then I came back this semester to teach as well. So I think there's just all of that. Like, I've loved pregnancy. I love teaching about pregnancy. I love being pregnant. I love what our bodies are capable of.
Yeah.
You know, when you're pregnant with somebody else's baby, you know, it sounds so weird. Not to make it sound like a baby's a growth or something, but like, it doesn't change my life. Like, I'm already going to be bathing my kids and going to the store and working, I might as well have a little traveler with me, right?
Yeah.
Like, So it was really not that.
Because you know, it doesn't change your life once it's done. No. You have the baby and then it's not like you're like, oh, I'm never going to sleep again. You go right back to your life.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds for like women who are done having their own families. And we're kind of, no, I wouldn't say done raising kids because you still have your kids to raise, but like you're done with the baby stuff, but yet you love being pregnant. It's like this total like, you know, copacetic relationship of like, hey, I want to be pregnant. And somebody else is like, hey, I want a baby. And you're like, hey, I don't want to have a baby. And they're like, I can't get pregnant. And it's like magic.
Right. How do your kids feel about it? Were they old enough to understand? I mean, like, what was the conversation around you carrying a baby and then giving it to their parents?
Yeah. So when I did my first one, Sawyer turned two, like the month before I gave birth. So he was like barely one when I started the process. So like I said, like I stopped breastfeeding, the kitchen's closed, let's do this thing basically is kind of how that went. So he really didn't know very much. My middle son was probably, I think, 4 at the time. And then my daughter was about 6, like had just turned 6. And so there's this book called The Kangaroo Pouch. I got that children's book. I read them that children's book. I remember back in the day. So this is in that day specifically was in 2007. I got the book. And the only thing I didn't like about it is it was about a mommy kangaroo and a daddy kangaroo that couldn't have a baby. But I was doing surrogacy for gay couples. And that was my gig. It was, again,
you only did for LGBTQ families?
Yes. Yeah. Because you remember, I'm like the world's best ally, right?
Right. You sure are.
Yes.
So, nod, wink, wink. Whoopsie-daisy. But yeah, whatever. But no, that
you're
was
like,
it.
It's something I can do for the gays.
You know, honestly. So
you're just a giver, Kelly.
I try my best.
Listen, we can downplay it, but it is. Still really amazing that
you're
doing it for the gays. Yeah, of course. Totally. Yeah.
It's awesome. even if it was like a, you know, a subtle subconscious thing that might've been happening, doesn't matter. You're still doing a wonderful thing for your people that were soon to be your people.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah. So, you know, it was one of those things where it worked out well because I complained actually when I did my little Amazon review, I was like, it's kind of a bummer that, you know, it's a daddy and a mommy kangaroo and not just two kangaroos. And then the author, and I'm sure I had nothing to do with my statement, actually rewrote the book. And she has another version now where it's just two kangaroos. So they don't mention gender at all. It's just about two kangaroos that are having a baby, which is great. So, so my kids, you know, they kind of understood it a little bit, at least the first, my oldest, the first time. By the second time around, everybody got the hang of it. By the third time around, everybody knew exactly what was going on. Yeah. My daughter, actually, it's funny that you mentioned it. I just did a Facebook Live with my daughter who's now 17, just like 2 weeks ago, like the Friday before Mother's Day, we did a Facebook Live for Growing Generations called My Mom is a Surrogate.
Oh, shut up. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so basically for that 40 minutes or whatever, she was just answering questions from that people had sent in about like, what's it like when your mom's a surrogate?
What'd she have to say? Anything? Or she
You know, Ruby's been amazing because she, first of all, she loves the fact that I was a surrogate. She thinks it's really great. Even now, you know, like when the babies were born, my first set of twins were born, she was in the second grade. She just started the second grade when they were born. And from that point on, she was always just very, like, I've always educated my kids a certain way in the fact of like, they, you know, my Ruby was like pointing out, you know, saying that she had a uterus in kindergarten. So, you know, when your mom,
just talking about this,
when your mom teaches human sexuality, like you're going to know the real names for things. And so it's pretty funny. And then of course teach others. And I'm like, oh, sorry, Bella's mom, that she's teaching you about a vagina, but whatever. But like, she thought it was great. And then, and even today, like if you, like when she does papers and they have to like write about like a hero or somebody, something that they're proud of or something that they think is amazing, she always writes about me and my surrogacies. And one of the questions that somebody asked was, do you think that you'll be a surrogate someday? And she said, yeah. She goes, I would love that. Like once I have my own kids, I'd love to do that. And for my kids, it's like, again, you know, they were raised that, you know, from the get-go, like, you know, the moment they breathed air, you know, it was like, you know, they could marry who they want. You know, some families have two moms, some have two dads, some have one mom, some have, you know, like there was just was never this kind of like, this is the expectation, because I kind of saw firsthand when, you know, whether it's your parents or society telling you this is the way it's going to be, it changes the way that you live your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's not really fair. Yeah. And so it's not fair for me to just assume that my kids are going to be straight. You know, so from the get-go, I want to make sure that they realize that, you know, hey, no matter what happens here, like, I've got your back. And no matter what happens here, you can have a family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so yeah, so all my kids were, you know, they thought it was great. Some of them, it was so funny. Like, there'd be times where I think Preston was like maybe 8, and so people would always come up. Of course, you'd see me with my 3 kids. And then of course, when I was carrying twins, I was kind of big. And so people were like, oh my gosh, you've got your hands full. And I'm like, not really, but whatever. But one time
they told me, hand these off.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, thanks. Yeah.
Keeping these.
Do I also look tired? Yeah. No. And that's just it. So somebody asked my son and said, hey, like, oh, aren't you so excited you're going to be a big brother? And he's like, oh, we're not keeping it. I was like, and like the woman looked at me and I was like, okay, I probably should explain, you know?
You should have been like, we're just not, and then walked away.
Exactly. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah, we don't want this one.
No. Tapped out at 3.
Do you want it? Because I'm looking for a home.
Right.
Call me.
Oh my gosh. Well, no. And it's so funny because when people hear that you're a surrogate, they think that that's how it works. So it's like, you know, I've got some ridiculous questions over the years. Like, of course, when I found out it was 2 dads, they'd be like, I had one time somebody said, did you have to have sex with them both? And I was
What?
Okay,
you have these things called doctors now, you idiot.
Right. I'm like, you don't know how IVF works. So yeah, no. Or they'd said, like, once they found out it was twins, I had some, you know, and a lot of times it was older people. They'd say, oh, does that mean you get to keep one of them? I was like, what? Why would I want to keep somebody else's baby?
Oh, why would I split 2 babies? What?
Right. You know, and so.
Yeah, I definitely get to keep one. I get to choose.
Right. I'm like, this is a Rumpel Stiltskin, for goodness sake.
You had so many coming outs.
Oh, yeah.
You had to like come out as a surrogate to your kids. And then like, it's just like how many times like people were asking you, but like, I'm just thinking about like, this is like 10 times being out as a gay person, everywhere you go, someone's going to ask about this baby and you have to go, I'm a surrogate. Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah. For me, I'm very open about all of it. I know some women, cause I'm friends, like I run a Facebook group for growing generation surrogates. And so, you know, there's like 300 of us on there and we talk about various things. And, you know, some people say, you know, I kind of like gauge the situation. And sometimes I'm just like, oh yes, thank you. Like, congratulations. Yes. Thank you. I, of course, and you can, my kids would probably shrug when I say this, everything is a teachable moment. So because I'm a teacher, everything's a teachable moment, even when I'm not teaching. And so, you know, I had a blog. So, I mean, it's still up. I haven't done much with it in the last, you know, few years, but for me, I was like, oh, you know what? This is a great way to kind of educate people about surrogacy. And I was thinking, well, the more people that knew about surrogacy, maybe more people would have babies for other people. And so, you know, my whole first surrogacy, I didn't say who the parents were. And I just wanted them, because I didn't want them to be like, oh, it's a gay couple, and then not listen to the message. So instead, people were like all in. They were like, this is amazing. You're amazing. They're amazing. This is so great that you're doing this. And then all of a sudden, it was like, I had the babies. Here's a picture of George Sanja and the twins. And record scratch, where's the mom? Right. And so it was like,
they thought you were doing it for some nice straight couple who had fertility issues.
Exactly. And so, I was eating it up because it's exactly what I wanted people to do. Like, I wanted people to be like, holy shit, like, it's a gay couple. Like, then all of a sudden be like, yeah, now how do you feel about it?
Yeah.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So do you like, still feel the same?
Is it still amazing? Am I still doing something amazing? Are they still amazing? Like, I wanted people to be kind of trapped in that and then have to think for themselves, like, whoa, like, look at me. I'm a homophobe or whatever, you know, like,
yeah. Look at you. So, look at you.
That's like master manipulation right there. I love it.
Look in the mirror. Yeah.
So, and of course that was online. Anybody who knew me in person, of course, knew, you know, like who I was doing it for, or if they were Facebook friends with me or whatever, you know, kind of knew certain things. But, you know, but at the time, again, it was just like this whole thing of just getting the message out that this is something, like, if you enjoy pregnancy, like, you could very well help somebody who needs you, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty obvious, obviously, that 2 men are going to need help. But not, you know, but it's not as obvious that, you know, that, you know, there are a lot of infertility issues out there. And so there are a lot of straight people who, again, for their entire lives, thought for sure they'd be carrying their own baby, and they can't, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people don't even really understand what a surrogate is, especially, I feel like, especially in the heterosexual world.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people assume,
I think a lot of people think it's your egg.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that there's still a lot of ignorance surrounding surrogacy or mm-hmm. gestational carriers, which yes. is what you technically are, right?
Mm-hmm. Gestational carrier.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So not my egg, you know, their embryo is placed inside my body and then I grow it. I'm an extreme babysitter is what I call myself. You know, because sometimes people will say like, well, oh, it's going to be so hard for you to give up the baby. And I'm like, it's not my baby. Like they give me the embryo, it grows, and then I give it back to them. Like I'm not, right. you know,
yeah.
I'm not giving away anything that's mine because it's not mine, you know?
You don't develop any sort of...
Yeah.
I don't want to,
or is there a closeness that you feel after? Like,
nothing. I know. I swear I'm not the coldest person that exists.
No, you don't sound cold. It's just contrary to like what one would think.
Right. So like people think, or a lot of people think that. And you know what? And I think part of that is because sometimes we'll see like the whole, like, you know, current affair or, you know,
there's always somebody stealing somebody's baby. TMZ. In a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, unfortunately, surrogates get like the worst, you know, rep ever. But basically, you know, the thing is that you come into this knowing that this isn't your baby. When you go with a legitimate agency like Growing Generations, you go through psychological screening. So, yes. you know, one of the things, you know, and that's like my job at Growing Generations now, like, you know, I carried, you know, I was a surrogate for them and now I work for them. And so in my job, I help screen surrogates and I'm like the first, I do their applications. I do the call, you know, I'm trying to be very transparent and giving them all this information so that way they can make an educated decision. But at the same time, I've got my feelers on going, okay, mm-hmm. like, okay. Like, that's interesting that she worded it that way or whatever. And so, you know, and so when we have people who we think that is going to be an issue for, they're not going to be a surrogate with us. Yeah. That would happen mm-hmm. with other agencies too. But that's where you, all of a sudden, when you get like the whole independent journeys, you know, you're like, ooh, I hope they're still screening the surrogate. And I hope, you know, cause it's like, why aren't they going with an agency? Did they not get right. like,
that's true with everything from like, not just surrogacy, but like when people who do go rogue with sperm donors, like they meet at random places or what, you just are like, God, I hope you're really thinking this through.
And sometimes
there's repercussions.
You know, and it works out for a lot of people, but
there are like, many cases where shit gets weird.
Kim, who we talked to in the last episode, talked about how detailed the screening is for egg donors. And it's really, really, it's hard to get through. What did she say? It was like only
1%.
1%. 1% gets through.
Yeah.
So it's really, and they just started this for sperm donors. Yeah. So it's totally different. But
I want to ask about your process in particular. So like, you know, because we covered a little bit of like the agency side with Kim, but I'm curious about like for you, how did you find Growing Generations as a surrogate? Like, did you hear somebody who'd done it? Like, I want to hear your sort of arc with it.
Yes. So when I was in high school, Days of Our Lives was on TV, right? I mean, I guess it's still on. I haven't watched it in like 30 years, but whatever. Dr. Marlena Evans in real life had a surrogate. And I remember seeing it. And that's why I mentioned Current Affair, because that's what it was on. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like how awesome is that? Like that woman had a baby for her. And I remember like a little seed was kind of put in my head. And I was like, you know, one day I'm going to do that. And so fast forward.
Have you ever emailed Dr. Marlena Evans and told her that it all started with her?
It all started with her. Like my parents.
Yeah, I feel like you need to reach out to her, but go ahead. Sorry.
I probably should. So then later after I had my own kids again, I was like, yes, I still want to do this. It was something that I had brought up to my ex as well. Like just even before we had kids, like, again, this is a goal that I had just like, you know, my master's and everything else. I was like, I want to do this before I die. So when the time came, I was like, okay, let me, you know, to Google, right? So it was 2007 and I Googled surrogacy for gay dads. Cause again, I had, there was a population. Yep. I was going for it. Right. So up came like two or three different agencies, Growing Generations being one of them. And I clicked around and I kind of looked at the websites and, you know, like Growing Generations had been around for a long time. You know, their website seemed very legit. They had lots of information, even to this day, like, you know, gosh, how many 12 years later or something. You still, like, as a surrogate, when you're searching for things, some agencies don't tell you the information that you should be able to find out before you apply. And that's one of the things that I loved about Growing Generations. Like, sometimes they won't even tell you compensation. They won't tell you, like, what some of the requirements are. Like, they want all this personal information before you even know whether you are qualified. I want to know more about them as a company. I want to know how long they've been doing this. I want to know this stuff before I give them all my personal information and have to fill out all my pregnancy stuff. So I decided that, yeah, Gigi was where I was going. And I will say that I also kind of feel like I lucked out there because I have calls all the time with women who are just like, oh, I just heard about you, whether it was like in an ad or they knew somebody else or whatever. And they're just kind of going with us just blindly. And what I feel when I do that and when I'm talking to them is I'm like, thank God you're with us or enter your deity here or whatever with us. Because I mean, if they were just going blindly with somebody else, they could really get screwed in the process. Yeah. Like, I almost feel like it's my job to protect women. And so that's the other reason why with the blog and everything, I'm like, if other women are going to be doing this, like, you know, we need to, you know, you need to be smart about this and make good decisions for you and your family. And the only way that you can do that is if you have all the information. So that way, you know, everything ahead of time, you know, like reduction and termination, like if you're going to end up carrying twins, you know, how many embryos are being transferred, you know, all these things that people should know before they sign any paperwork.
So go into those things like reduction and termination. Go into that. What is that?
So
what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is like, let's say for instance, like my first journey. Okay. So my first journey, they're both dads. Only one was a sperm donor. They were hoping for twin girls. And so I was like, okay, it's like, it's not quite a vending machine. So, okay, we'll see what
we can do. My best.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm going to
press my nose right here.
Exactly. And no whammy.
Let's do this. Right. So I was like, okay, I hope so. So back then, so this is, you know, 2007, when you did embryo transfers, it was kind of like, you know, we're putting in two or three, hoping that one or two take, right? Nowadays, it's not like that. It's like most embryo transfers are only one, especially if you only want one. But back then, I remember, so they had three embryos. One looked pretty good. One was okay. And the other one was complete crap. And so what we all decided to do was,
as far as embryos go.
Yeah.
That's what the doctors literally tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what they tell you.
This one's complete crap.
They're like, this one is no,
right.
I mean, they might say it's not viable, but they're also saying it's crap.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like you don't want this
one. I've been
there. Right.
Yeah.
So, when they went to put them in, they're like, well, is it okay if we put in all three? Because this one is not going to do anything. Right. And I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. Like if they would rather it, you know, die with the others versus in a trash can somewhere. Sure. Like that's
die fine. With the others, you know, die like, with the ship. Like, yeah, exactly. Arms.
Kelly, I have to say they still do that. I mean, they were doing that 2 years ago too.
Yeah.
I mean, when I went to do my IVFs, same thing happened every time I went. We should just put these
the crappy
three
one
in because these two are not viable really. And they'll help this one. So it's still a thing that happens.
Yeah. So who knows about the mediocre one? Maybe it took, maybe it didn't, maybe it was the best, the better one. But what ended up happening is only one of them took and it split into,
into
identical twin girls because
did either the egg donor or the dad have twins?
No, you know what? No. There may have been something. Cause I remember afterwards I went back and scoured through like her profile. Oh my gosh. So like, you know, a lot of times, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but it did. And luckily, you know, the other one didn't take two, but here's the thing. Let's say that other one did take, and we had a set of identical twins and a singleton. We had already discussed in our match meeting, it was already in our contract that I am not carrying three babies. All right.
Yeah.
So, and they don't want three babies. So what ends up happening is if that were to have happened, our options would have been we were reduced to one or we reduced to the two. But luckily that, you know, that didn't happen. So like in all three of my journeys.
They would never have paired you up if you said, I'm definitely not doing three. And they said we would do three.
Right.
They wouldn't do that, right?
They would not pair. Right. Yeah. We would not have worked together.
So you both were on the same page with
that. I can imagine though, if you got three inside of you, you're feeling
one way.
What if
they changed their mind?
And they're like, those are our three babies.
But you have a contract, right?
So you have a contract. Mm-hmm. So it's legal and it's locked.
Right.
But that's complicated. That could get complicated.
Yeah.
And which is why you want an agency behind you.
Yeah. Right. Don't go rogue.
Right.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. Like, let's say, you know, and let's say they say, oh, we changed our mind. We want all three. I'm sorry. I'm doing this to help somebody out, but I'm not doing this so I could be on bed rest and not raise my own kids. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I'm not doing this so that way, you know.
Because three, you'd be on bed rest, right?
Oh my gosh. For sure. Of course. And you'd definitely give birth early. With the twins, it was even funny because you know, like I wasn't on bed rest, and it ended up being almost like a mean joke. And the fact that, you know, my kids came at 36 weeks, 38 weeks, and 37 weeks. Mm-hmm. Those twins, we had a C-section date scheduled at 39 weeks because they won't, even with twins, they would, that hospital would not schedule until 39 weeks. Huh? Like the day before my C-section is when I was going to my monitoring appointments, and I started those at like 30 weeks. So for like 8 weeks, I was driving twice a week to be monitored, thinking any day now, right, past 35, 36 weeks. So like at like 38 weeks, 5 days.
Twins, they've got to come out.
Yes. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, where's the eviction notice? Like, I am come done. Like, get, I mean, and out. it was perfect timing because I literally had half an inch between my belly and the steering wheel. And I was like as far back as possible. So
I don't know. I think, Callie, the point is your uterus is too comfy.
Yes.
And
yes,
those babies did not want to come out.
They didn't. When you had twins, the second time, was it the same exact experience?
No.
They stayed in too long?
Yeah. So no, my second set of twins, yeah, were two dads. They each fertilized the eggs. So they each put in one embryo from each of them, right?
Oh, cool.
And then again, because the vending machine, but I'm like, I'm one, you know, I'm three for three. They were hoping for boy girl twins. And I was like, I'll see what I can do. And they ended up with boy girl twins. So it was like,
with, you know, one egg each from each of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes the gay boys have it made with that.
No, huh? So yeah. Lucky.
Oh my God. So they really got lucky.
If you choose to do that, because like, yeah, my first set, they went with one of the sperm because he had like three brothers, but no grandchildren. And then his husband was like one of like seven or eight kids, and they had multiple grandchildren. So, you know, they went ahead and decided, okay, let's go ahead and use Sanja's sperm, because then that way, you know, they could have, you know, grandbabies on that side of the family as well.
Aww.
Yeah. So my second time around, you know, fraternal twins, and then they stayed till about 37 weeks.
Wow.
And then my last set of intended parents, they wanted more than one baby, but they didn't want to do more than one at a time. Part of that was because they were doctors as well, I believe. Like, so they kind of knew what that looked like. And so they were like, let's go ahead and just do one, you know, and then later they'll do a sibling project.
But you weren't, you were like, but I'm done.
Well, you know, so here's the thing. When I matched with them, it said, you know, they want to do another one. And so I came back with their profile and I said, you know, if you're wanting to have the same surrogate for both of your journeys, like, I'm not your girl. Like this is me. This is my last one. I'm tapping out. Right. And so they said, no, it's okay. Like, we really like your profile. Like, you know, yes, we'll figure it out. I'm like, okay. So I did that. Well, then afterwards, a little while later,
hi, Kelly.
Yeah, they're like, you know, and I'm like, you know what? I could probably do, like, as long as the doctors were okay with it, because, you know, I'm healthy. I have, you know, my pregnancies are great and everything.
Yeah.
That last one, my water did break a little bit too early, which is funny. Mm-hmm. So I can carry twins to almost 39 weeks, you know, and then my water breaks just all of a sudden at 34 weeks. Boom.
Yeah, but at this point, you've had 8 children come out of your vagina. That's, I mean, at some point, your water's like, I'm sleepy.
Well,
it was so, like, that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I've had 3 children come out of my vagina and 2, 4, 5 out of my uterus via C-section.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All the rest were C-sections. Say,
yeah.
Yeah. So my
twins
surrogacy
are generally C-sections. Oh.
Yeah, it can go, you know, it can go both ways. But for me, I didn't mind the C-section because, again,
I asked about that. I had heard, because I feel like somebody I knew had a couple of C-sections, like I think 3. Mm-hmm. And they had said, like, going forward, after a certain number, there becomes like a weakness at the scar. Mm-hmm. Like, did I make that up? Like, then it starts to get complicated for carrying more.
No. So what happens is, like, the ASRM guidelines, basically for surrogacy, say, and again, guidelines, is 3 C-sections, and that should probably be it. Right.
And you should wrap.
Yeah.
Right.
So like with Growing Generations, if somebody applies and they've had 3 C-sections, that's going to be a no. Again, they're not part of that 1%. Now, if we have a returner, somebody who was with us before, who wants to come back with the same intended parents, and the intended parents are okay with a 4th C-section, if the doctor is okay with her having a 4th C-section, sometimes that can happen. It does not happen very often at all. And that's kind of what happened with me, which was, you know, they talked about it and I said, you know, I would be open to that as long as the doctors were okay with that. And they said that it would be fine. And so again, that's the whole screening process when they're looking through medical records, doing ultrasounds, you know, checking that scar tissue, like making sure everything's okay. So my wife and I actually signed on to do a fourth surrogacy. And, you know, we flew down, it was April of 2015. We flew down to Growing Generations. You know, we had our in-person screening and came back, you know, cause we were going to do like, again, a last hurrah. I wanted to get a joke that said like, just kidding. Like I'm done. Just kidding. But then, that same week, our youngest son was diagnosed with cancer. So we were like, okay, so I called my guys and I was like, all right, so this is happening. You know, I don't know what this is going to look like. I don't know how long this is going to take. I have no idea. You know, it's Burkitt's lymphoma. It's, you know, it's got, you know, 80% cure rate. It usually has like one of the quickest treatments there is, you know, like there's really usually like 4 or 5 months of chemo and things like that. I said, I don't know where I'm going to be at the end of it, but I think that you guys should probably find somebody else. And so at first they're like, you know what, we'll wait and see, you know, cause we're not, we don't need this right away. Let's see how this all works out. And then after a few months, it became apparent that chemo wasn't working. And so I reached back out to them again and I said, okay, you guys, if you guys are going to have another baby, like it's definitely not with me. So you're going to need to find somebody else. And, you know, they knew, I think, you know, in there, because they also dealt with nuclear medicine. So like when I sent them pictures of like the initial, you know, stage 4, like cancer, and they saw, it's like what they did for a living. And so I'm sure they looked at it and they're like, yeah, this isn't working. So I'm sure even though I was saying like, hey guys, it's okay, move on, they were probably telling me no, because they didn't want to stress me out while they were kind of going on and doing their own thing, which is totally should, you know? Right. So we didn't end up doing that journey. They did end up having a little girl. And, you know, when they came back over to meet their surrogate in the United States and everything, because they're from Australia, they had me fly down. And so I got to meet their other surrogate, and they also had a surprise wedding and they didn't tell us. So the other surrogate and I were at their wedding, and you know, it was just us. It was my intended parents, both of their surrogates, and then the baby that I had gave birth to before, which was now, I guess maybe at that time he was like 4 maybe. So it was really cool. So, you know, I wasn't able to kind of fulfill that, but then I also sit there and think, you know what, maybe things happen for a reason, and the fact of me not having a fourth C-section, because even now, like at the time I was like, okay, I want to help them, I want to do this, and as long as doctors are okay with it, I'm okay with it. But in retrospect, and I think about it, or now when I see, you know, I've got friends who they've had 4 C-sections, 5 C-sections, because again, they're dealing with agencies that I guess their doctors are okay with it. And I sit there and I've seen some negative things happen, and I'm just like, oh, I'm glad that I didn't do that.
Consequences to the body.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be at some point, like the stomach wall and all that.
Right. It's sad sometimes because women, whether they're surrogates with us or not, you know, whether they're applying for the first time or applying for the second, third, or fourth time, you know, sometimes it's our job to say no. Like if they can't say no, it's our job to be like, no, like, unfortunately, because of the fourth C-section or because of the 32-week pregnancy or whatever, like, you know, because of your health, you know, and what could possibly happen to you, we're going to have to say no. Now, do those women usually go someplace else and end up getting matched and having a baby? Yeah. but
at least it wasn't on your
watch. But it wasn't our watch.
Didn't put someone in a dangerous situation.
I have to ask, how is your son?
So unfortunately, even when something is 80% curable, my son passed away February 19th, 2016, after a 10-month battle of Burkitt's lymphoma. At one point, we had like a Hail Mary where his sister, Ruby, was a match for a stem cell transplant. And so we did, you know, we got his cells, and then we were actually moving into UCSF's family housing to prepare for the transplant when we got the call saying that the cancer did not go away as much as it needed to. So they canceled it. And so at that point in time, there was nothing else that could be done. So we decided that we're going to make the best of his last few months, however much that was. And he was, you know, absolutely amazing. And we actually have an organization now called Live Like Soy, S-O-Y, because his name is Sawyer. And it's all about, you know, children who are on hospice and just making those last few months amazing for them and for your family. Mm-hmm. Because like somebody had told me at one point in time, like, you know, don't grieve now. Like you're going to have plenty of time to grieve after he's gone. Like right now it's about just making the most of it. Yes, it's sad, But at the same time, like, I still feel like he's here with us. So there's signs everywhere. So
yeah. I'm so sorry.
I'm glad that it comes up because there are so many people who, A, think that it will never happen to them. And childhood cancer is not rare at all.
Yeah.
And so it just gives an opportunity where people think about, like, you know, that not only do children get cancer, but yes, children still die. Like, it's not all shiny St. Jude's, you know, commercials, you know? So, so I don't mind talking about that.
Yeah. And look at you, you lost a baby, but you're still giving life.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's well, just.
And that's what was so interesting. Like my first set of intended parents, Sanj had said, like, he goes, oh my gosh, he goes, this is so cosmically wrong. He's like, how could somebody who has given, you know, five children to three different couples then lose her own child? And I was like, yeah, you're right. This is kind of wrong. You know, like it's unfair on several different levels, but that's life, right? Like just, it's ridiculous. Mm. So I will say one of the things that we did do before Sawyer died, George and Sanj brought the girls to come say goodbye. And so they came to say goodbye, like probably like a week before he passed. And so, you know, it was just one of those things where it was just, it was good. It was, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, he wanted to see them, you know, one last time or whatever. So,
family, it's a big family. You're creating like such a huge network of people that are full of love for you and in everybody involved with you.
Right, right. And not, you know, not all surrogacies are going to end up as like, oh, we're best friends. Because even my second set, you know, like they moved to New York. And but if I know that if I go to New York and they know that I'm there, they'll be like, come and stop by. So like, I haven't seen them since the last time I was in New York, which was, you know, before Sawyer got sick. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
But they don't send pictures or things like that.
Oh no, they
like
do.
Or...
They do. Like all of my intended parents send pictures. And then my second set that live in New York now, they send my family a gingerbread house every Christmas. And so it's got all of my kids' names on them and everything. And so that's awesome. And they send, you know, pictures and cards. And of course we follow them on Instagram and, you know, and Facebook and stuff too. I wish that I could, you know, they're all so gorgeous, like seriously. Seriously, I mean, none of it has anything to do with me because, you know, it's, you know, genetically they're not mine, but I don't know. I mean, my uterus may be magic. I'm just throwing that out there.
We learned something, Kelly. We learned something from our podcast. We had some doctors on who told us there's this thing called epigenetics
that you influence.
The woman whose womb it is can turn on what genes are prevalent in the baby, right? So you can turn on or turn off whatever comes
based on how you are.
Wow. So what I'm hearing you say is that I am 100% responsible for the beauty of all those kids, and I'll take it,
and also for every good thing they do. But you know what? The things that they don't do that are not good.
Nothing to do with that.
Those just weren't turned on.
Right.
That's not you.
That's just their genetics.
Yeah.
Right. You can't win them all.
That's just their dads.
Exactly.
I mean, I love that you shared your story with on all this. Like, it's just, sorry if I was all just like fixated on how much I hate being pregnant, but like, that's all I could think about was, but it's like, it's just a really wonderful thing being a surrogate, like what you're doing, what you've done.
Thank you.
I mean, even Kim from last episode talked about how special these women they choose to be surrogates are. It's a very, very special soul who passes through.
through these people's lives. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you're like I don't know. It's like, I have some picture of like Gandalf, like you're just like there and like people are coming through and you're like, you shall pass. It's like amazing.
You're just a really good soul. You're just a better soul than us.
No.
That's why we love you.
Well, thank you so much. This was really wonderful.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Wow.
She was a unicorn.
What a story.
She was totally a unicorn.
What a story.
I mean, holy crap. I loved her.
Oh, man.
I love that she just came on and shared that. And I love how giving she is. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. She gave her womb.
Beautiful.
Three times.
Special. Beautiful. Once again.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Okay. Next week's our live show, folks. Come see us 6:10, 7 p.m. at the Green Space. You can get tickets at ovariestalk.com.
And they're selling like hotcakes. So you better get them. Like, really, don't wait.
And if you miss us, just reach out to us on the social media.
Mm-hmm.
We won't be mad at you. You can get us at ovariestalk on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can do
it. Go ahead, Robin.
Ovaries_talk on Instagram.
Yeah.
If these ovaries could talk on Facebook, and ovariestalk gmail.com.
She got it.
Bam. Did it.
Boom. I can't wait till we add more to this list.
Let's not.
Snapchat.
No, I will never.
That's for babies.
So thank you to our sponsor, Storyworth. We love you. The books are an amazing idea.
I can't wait to get mine.
Yeah. Remember to visit storyworth.com/OCT for that $20 off. Mm-hmm. Good night.
No.
Good day.
No, eggs.
I said good day. Oh, so we have a close. Eggs, ovaries.
Out. Ovaries, good talk, they would say.
Eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.